Welcome to the Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where we host in-depth conversations on everything real estate with the industry's biggest movers and shakers. I'm your host, Ken McElroy, joined by my co-host, Daniil. Let's get right into this episode.
Hey, everybody, it's Ken, and I am very, very grateful to have my good friend Blair Singer here.
Awesome to be here, man.
As always. So a lot of you guys don't know the full backstory, but I'm going to let Blair talk a little bit about how he met Robert Kiyosaki, because that's a cool story in itself. But let me tell you about how I met Blair through Robert Kiyosaki. So I was pitching a deal a while back with Robert and Kim. They had just written Rich Dad Poor Dad. I read it, and you know, we were just getting to know each other. Robert asked me to come to New York. So I went, not knowing, you know, the entourage that Robert had at the time. And we were at a venue in Harlem and in New York. And I'll never forget, I was sweating bullets because I know Robert wanted me to go talk. And I didn't know how to speak in front of public, in front of the public. And I went up there, and I'm sure I did not do very well. Let's just put it that way. I bumbled, I'm sure, and I was all over the map and all that stuff. And as you like to, you have to put yourself out there. And I'll never forget, I was like, gosh, there, you know, when you get off a stage, there are a bunch of things I wish I would have said differently. And I was concerned about the 4,000 people that were in the room, the lights are on and everybody's watching, and it was just me. And I sat down after my speech, and Blair came over, sat down to me, and you had taken extensive notes. I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember this?
I remember this, yes.
He had taken extensive notes on my talk, and he said, if you just reorganize it, and you just put it in this order, and you say it this way, it'll be the exact same thing, and it'll be better. Right? You remember that?
I do remember that.
I was so grateful. That was 20-plus years ago. And anyway, I mean, you took an interest in me a long time ago, so I can't tell you how grateful I am to have you on.
Well, thank you. You know, the favors go back and forth for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I remember it was also in New York when we were at a big book show, and I've done little pieces of real estate investing, but never a big one. And we're sitting in the booth at Time to Kill, and you said, and you pull up your phone and you showed me your phone, and you found a church here in North Scottsdale.
Yep.
He goes, this is the building you need to buy. And I looked at it and I just stopped talking. And you looked me square in the eye and you go, now what's your little voice saying?
Which, by the way, he had a book out called Little Voice Mastery.
It was a book I wrote, and it was like, it changed everything. So,
yep. And you bought that church.
I bought that church. We sold that church, you know, made a profit on it, had good cash flow. It was awesome under your guidance.
Yeah, so we have this long, great history, you know, that started years ago, and you've been a teacher, you've been a mentor, you've been a coach of mine for a long, long time. Like, let's first start with, you know, the brief story of how you met, you know, Robert, who, you know, connected all of this, because you were really Robert's first friend back in Hawaii. Well, not his first friend, but your first connection to part of the Rich Dad brand.
Right. Yeah, I lived in Ohio, moved to Hawaii. I was a sales rep for a big company, Unisys at the time, and I always wanted to have my own business. So I had a little surf shop on the side with a partner. That was another story, the partnership. We were talking about partnerships earlier. Okay. But had the surf shop. So as long as I was making my sales numbers, my sales manager didn't care. So I'm working in the surf shop in the afternoon. So one day, this 6'3" Japanese dude in a black jacket and a briefcase walks into my surf shop, trying to get me to buy these stupid Velcro nylon wallets.
Which you guys might not know, but Robert invented the nylon Velcro wallet.
Right, exactly. And I'm looking at him, I go, this is really strange. And I tried to crack a joke. I said, dude, I said to him, dude, my customers are surfers. They have no money. What would they need a wallet for? And he didn't laugh at all.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he went into his mode of, you don't know anything about retail. You don't know anything about business. He started yelling at me, and I'm thinking,
perfect. We know this.
This is a pretty interesting sales approach, right? Because I teach sales. You just yell at your customer until you beat them up, and then they'll buy. And it worked. I bought them. We didn't sell any, but we became great friends after that.
Yeah, you did. And I'll tell you what, like you guys started studying together, and you have all kinds of stories. We don't have a lot of time to go into each and every one of them, but I mean, you studied early on with Robert and learned a lot of the stuff that he talks about today, and you know, through you with Buckminster Fuller and Money and You, and just a whole bunch of really cool things. And you guys have a really, really cool history and a cool friendship.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a best friend of mine for over 40 years.
Yeah,
I mean, longer than I've even known my wife.
Yeah,
he's been a great teacher for me, a great mentor, and always somebody that. I think what I'm always grateful to him is that he's always seen something in me that I didn't see.
He's toughest on you.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a whole string of advisors that he assembled, you know, over time. And, you know, we all just don't look him in the eye, you know, like, right? but he's tough on you, I think, because you guys have known each other so long. And it's true. He's tough on all of us. He sees potential in us and then just grinds it out of us.
That's right.
You know, maybe not in the most tactful way, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, full frontal assault.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it comes. And he knows that we can handle it, and he knows that there's no sense waiting.
And it comes from love, too.
Always.
Always. And there's the truth. It might not look like it, but it does. And if you can get past the anger, you know, right. You know, it does. But let's turn to sales, you know, because that's obviously what you're most known for, sales and training and marketing and branding, and you're brilliant at all of those things. You've written a bunch of books. We'll put them all up here. You know, from Sales Dogs to, you know, Little Voice Mastery, and now this Summit Leadership we're going to talk about in a minute, which you guys know that, you know, I climbed Kilimanjaro only twice. How many times have you climbed it?
12.
12 times. So, but what Blair does is he actually does a summit. A summit on the summit. So he brings people on and does actual seminars. They're climbing up. I do want to talk about that, but let's talk about first how you got into sales, because you're all over the world.
Right.
I mean, when I say all over the world, guys, I mean all over the world.
Yeah, literally right now about 35 countries around the world.
Yeah.
I'm actively training.
And you have salespeople in all those countries.
That's right. Yeah, we got a team of like combination of salespeople, licensees, in every one of those countries. And it's taken a long time to grow.
Yeah, I've seen your ups and downs.
But they're pretty phenomenal. And the reason that I teach sales is because it's your number one skill. It's your number one skill in business. And a long time ago, when I was doing a lot of corporate training work, after I sold my trucking business and all that stuff, I was working with big organizations. And we had this is another funny story. We were doing a National Achievers Congress in Singapore, big stage, 8,000 people in the room. I was one of the speakers. Norman Schwarzkopf was a speaker. I think Bill Clinton was there. Kiyosaki was there. I was there. Okay, so
those three others, who are they? And then you?
I'm just kidding.
Of course. All right. By the way, this conference is spectacular.
Yeah.
I've been to it.
So I went up there and I was talking about teams, how to build championship teams and standing ovation. It was a great presentation, and I made an offer for an audio program and sold absolutely nothing.
Okay. Wow.
Robert comes on next, and he does a crappy presentation because he was not feeling well, and he was supposed to talk for 90 minutes, only talked for about 45, held up his cash flow game. It was the first time he ever showed it to anybody. He says, all I can tell you about this game is the more times you play it, the richer you'll become. They're here if you want them. And people flooded the freaking stage, man. They went crazy. And so he calls me out of the green room. He goes, hey, Blair, come check this out. Now, people are throwing their credit cards and all that kind of stuff, and they pushed my stuff off the table.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm depressed. And he's laughing his butt off. He thought that was funny. He goes, Blair, he goes, that was the best presentation I think I've ever seen anybody give. Only one problem. Wrong topic.
Yeah.
Boom. He said, people are going to spend $200, let's say, spend $200 on how to deal with their boss who's kind of a jerk, or $200 to get rich. Which do you think they're going to spend their money on? Like, good point.
Yeah.
It was that night over a bunch of drinks that we created my first book, which was called Sales Dogs.
Oh, wow.
And all we did was we recalled all of our, he goes, look, Blair, you've been selling your whole life. You're good at it. You won all these awards. Why don't you just write a book on sales? Because sales equals income. I go, okay. So that night, we thought of all of our friends, and we came up with five different personalities and all that stuff.
Who was the poodle?
Who is the poodle? A woman by the name of Leanne Carson.
I know.
I know her. I can picture that poodle
is exactly her.
Oh, really? Which, by the way, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, in this book, Sales Dogs, he has different kinds of dogs that represent different kinds of people.
Yeah, different kinds of people. So it's a different selling personality.
Yeah.
And also, whoever you're talking to, you got to match their personality to understand all that. So, and that was the first, and it's been, it still sells like crazy.
Yes,
all over the world.
And I don't even know how many languages.
At least 20.
Yeah. So first of all, a lot of us struggle with, you know, just growing, starting a business,
right,
and then, you know, growing the business locally. I don't know how you've done it to 30 plus countries, you know, different languages, different, you know, different kinds of dialect, different kinds of training, different kinds of inflections,
yep,
you know, all those kinds of things. So I don't know how you were able to pull that off, but you did very successfully. It's really a pleasure to have you in here today because you're almost never in the United States.
I'm leaving next month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know. So let's before we get into, some of the other things, let's talk about what are some of the basic things that people miss in sales?
Okay, a couple things. First of all, sales equals income. We've established that. If you can't sell, there's no income. And anybody that's ever complained about lack of anything, and particularly lifestyle or money, it's because they can't sell.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. They think the product will sell itself. They think somebody else will sell it for them. All that garbage, which is basically garbage.
Once again, I know how Robert, I love Robert because he goes, well, if you can't go on a date, you can't sell. He just basically cut things like, you know, if you can't get a date, you can't sell. Right?
That's right. It's true. It's true. So that's one thing people miss. So they abdicate it. Second thing is we have an expression that telling is not selling. When you're just pontificating about what you're offering and talk, that doesn't sell anything. It bores people. They check out. They're not interested.
Now that's what everybody thinks selling is.
Right.
Actually, right?
Yeah, it's about value. Yeah, it is, but it's not even so much what you're saying. It's the way you communicate it. There are some people that have horrible product knowledge. They're probably not that articulate, but they sell well because they know how to engage a prospect or engage an audience.
That's a good point.
Online or offline.
Yeah.
And that's what mostly it takes. I assume when I coach people or train people that your product is good, okay? Otherwise, don't come to me because your product is schlocky. Nothing's going to help you.
But I always watch, you know, it's funny because most businesses are not like brand new, like revolutionary. They're just small variations of something that is already out there. You know what I mean? So I always find it fascinating where, you know, there's brands that make it to a certain point, companies. And then somebody just says, you know, I could market this better and I could do this better. But really, they're doing the exact same thing. And I think one of the most obvious ones is insurance, you know, or banking. Like, they're all the same.
Right.
Right? But it's fascinating how different a strategy each one has. And that's kind of what you're saying is some hit you here in the heart.
Yep.
Some, you know, try to get you in the head, and the ones that hit you in the heart are the ones that win.
Yeah, and so think about your bank, okay? So if all banks do the same thing, which one are you going to go with? And it's going to be something about their service. I learned this early, is that it's not what you do, it's the way you do it that makes the big difference. And
right.
And as this world gets crazier and crazier and crazier, that's even more important right now.
And I know one of the things we studied with Rich Dad over the years was this, what we call the BI triangle. But the product is the smallest piece, and that's what everyone focuses on.
Right.
Is, you know, everybody thinks that their product is like, you know, is the thing that should require all the focus. But it's communication, it's cash flow, it's legal, it's systems, it's the marketing and the branding and all that. The product is almost irrelevant.
Right.
I mean, it's not irrelevant, obviously, but It can be.
And, you know, and the art form is in pieces you're talking about. What's your internal communication like? How functional is your team? How well do they work together?
Yeah.
How well do you market out to the public? You know, all that's marketing. And by the way, sales is not just about selling a product. It's also about recruiting. I mean, if you want to bring somebody on your team, you want to build a great team.
Yeah.
Why would they want to work for you?
Yeah.
Why would they want to work? All these people resigning over the last couple of years. Why? Yeah. Because businesses aren't given, don't know what their employees want, and so they're not providing that for them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, guy, you know, when that hit me the hardest was when I first early on started speaking with you guys and going around on the road. I remember Robert's like, well, he goes, let's create a product. This is right before we went up on stage. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, we're going to create a product, you know, the keys to cash flow. I'm like, well, I don't have a product like that. He's like, doesn't matter. I'm like, okay. So we get up on stage. He's like, how many people would like, you know, this CD set, I think at the time it was CDs, from Ken, and a little workbook on the keys to cash flow. And like hundreds of people raised their hand, and he sold a bunch, and we didn't have a product. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, it is really, it was really a mind blower for me, because I realized that what he was doing was solving a problem that people had, and he knew that I could do the product. But I think a lot of times people create a product and then they try to sell it without even knowing if it's what people want.
Yeah, and you notice it, in that scenario, the first thing he did is ask them.
Yeah.
He said, how many of you would like this, that does this? How many like it? If nobody raised their hand, there would have been no product.
Correct.
Okay, but because they responded, then you created one.
It was, it blew my mind, because it's the exact opposite of what you learn in school. You know, I was a marketing major and in the business school and finance too, But they don't teach you that. They teach you, you know, this is how you market this. That's all completely nonsense now because of social media and all the stuff that's happened at the moment. But it is very, very interesting. And so that was the other question I want to ask you, is how do you stay relevant today with the way things are moving online?
Well, it's a challenge, okay? But I try to, one of the things Dr. Buckminster Fuller taught us is about principles. You know, principles like gravity is a principle. It's true all the time. You know, there's no exception. So I just find in business, particularly in teaching and coaching, is I can just stay with the principle and apply the principle to whatever's going on right now. Like when I say, yeah, telling is not selling. That doesn't matter what's going on in social media. It's even more exacerbated then.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? So it's about staying with the principles involved. What is sales? Find out what people want. Find out, asking questions, right? Find out what people want and help them get it. Simple. That doesn't change. And I always say the biggest thing about sales, by the way, is not selling to your customer, not just recruiting. The toughest sell of all is you selling you to yourself.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Well, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, we face obstacles, we make mistakes, we fall down. And the question is, can you get back up and keep going, right? I remember my first sales position back with Unisys way back when in Honolulu, there was a sign on the wall that says, salesmanship begins when the customer says no. And I go, okay, I got this. I had never sold anything before. I'm going to go out and handle objections. And I got flashed. I mean, I had people just barbecuing me, slicing me up. I couldn't even give a presentation. I go, wow, this is tough. Next day, I saw the sign again. Salesmanship begins when the customer says no. Okay, so I'm going to go more energy tomorrow. So then the second day I go out on the job, I go out there with more energy to sell. Well, the problem with that is my energy was higher. Their energy was higher. And they're screaming at me, get out of here, you Holly boy. You don't belong here. Go back to the mainland. We don't want you. I mean, it was brutal. I was going to quit. That's it. My experience in sales was 2 days, I'm quitting. I was going back into my manager. This is not for me. I can't do this. And I saw that sign one more time, and it froze me. And I looked at the sign, and salesmanship begins when the customer says no. Okay, I get it. It's not about the customer. But when the customer says no, that's when doubt, lack of confidence, and all that stuff starts seeping in. That's when I got to start selling me to me. To get my ass back up, go out there and learn what I need to learn and keep going. And that was a game changer for me. The third day I got there and make, I don't know how many, 50, 60 calls, sold nothing. But I accomplished the most important sale, which was me selling me to me.
Yeah.
And so what I find is that's a principle true in all cases, is that at the end of the day, no matter what's going on, and there's a lot going on, grant you, but you got to be able to sell yourself. To keep going, sell yourself on your ability to take another step forward. Going up Kilimanjaro, same thing. You got to sell yourself one more step, one more camp, one more day.
Yeah.
That's the big sale.
I know one of the guys that we were lucky enough to interview, you and I, was Chris Voss. Never Split the Difference. Remember that? And, you know, if you guys don't know who he is, he's the top FBI negotiator, and he teaches at Harvard, and he teaches all these negotiation skills. Now,
specializes in hostage situations.
Specializing in hostage. So anyway, it was a fascinating conversation because he's like, you know, how do you negotiate with somebody that has 20 people and they just want to kill themselves? Or, you know, they want something, but we don't know what they want. And very rarely is it money. Almost never. I was like, wow. And he said, it's exactly what you just said. It's asking, right? It's finding out what they want. But people don't approach life that way. And he's like, he goes, once you find out what they want, then you solve their problem for them. Right. And it's all different each time. So imagine these are bank robbers, I guess. Well, they're not really robbing the bank. They have hostages, right? And he went in and started talking about the ones in Central America and all the other places. He's like, sometimes they just want $150 and a box of beer, you know? But they've got some American tourist or businessman or something. And he's like, if you just find out what it is that they want, right. And they always start off very unreasonable. Right. I want a jet. I want a helicopter. I want $1 million or whatever it is. He goes, I think he said his average payout was less than $500 or something. Wasn't it so crazy? But it really hit me because I was like, you know, it really is. It's the opposite of what most people think. Most people think selling is hardcore, trying to convince something to somebody to buy it so they'll leave them alone and move to the next person. But it's really, you know, how do you solve that person's problem, right?
That's right. That's right. And the only way to do that is by asking. You know, and we're just not taught to do that. As a matter of fact, in school, teacher asks a question, you got to answer.
Yeah.
So you're programmed to answer. So part of it, if you want to be good in sales, part of it is that you got to flip that scenario around in your brain and program yourself to ask and ask and ask. You know, when I teach, I'm in front of a room teaching, somebody clapped me once, 25 questions in 2 minutes that I'll ask a whole group of people that's online or offline, just kind of rhetorical questions.
Yeah.
Because one, it keeps them engaged. Second of all, it allows you to calibrate. You said something to me once, I'll never forget. This is a lesson in sales. You said that when you sell, you said if you ask a lot of questions and you ask a lot of questions, find out what the client wants and you let them go. Sooner or later, when they're done, all you got to do is turn around and give them right back exactly what they said they wanted.
It's called,
they sold themselves.
It's called mirroring.
Right.
It's really true.
Right.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. There are some basic things, and if you can really change your trajectory
right.
with just a couple little things, if people were really, I guess, the other one is just awareness and conscious and presence, which we also study. We won't go down that road right now, but some of it is just knowing. You know what? Observing the observer, right?
That's right.
Watching yourself and what you're doing, you know. And if you really truly care with the other person and you really believe in your product, it should not be that hard.
No, it shouldn't be. Right? I always tell people, I say, look, when it comes to sales, sales is not a performance; it's a conversation.
Yeah.
And when I teach people to teach, become trainers, same thing. People get all caught up in how to perform. I go, it's not a performance; it's a conversation. And I think that. For whatever reasons in school, because we're put under the spotlight, that you feel like you got to perform, you got to be the best, you got to perform. And you know what? I'm just not that good as a performer. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I remember I had a really angry person in front of me, just bah, and I just sat and listened, and then I said, "Well, what is it you want?" And it just like shook them,
right?
Like they were like,
"Yeah," because they were looking for a fight,
and they didn't know what they wanted,
right?
Right. And then they started trying to fight again. I'm like, well, just tell me what you want and maybe we can solve that. And, you know, and sometimes people don't really even know.
That's right.
And it's very interesting. Like it can diffuse a situation very quickly if you don't take it personally.
Right. Well, yeah. And everybody says don't take objections personally. Well, It's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard to do. And the only way I know to do it is you got to practice it.
Yeah.
You practice it. We drill it and drill it and drill it again and again and again. My son, you know, Zach.
Yeah, he's the best.
He wants to be an entrepreneur someday. And I said, goes, I want you to teach me. I said, you go learn to sell first. He goes, you know, no, I want to teach. I go, no, you go sell. So he got himself a job selling water door to door in Austin, Texas.
By the way, dude, I don't know if you know, but I have at least a dozen of those 5 gallon bottles at my house from somehow.
Did he sell them to you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know, and it was like, and he went out there, he became number one in a couple of months because he just like, I go, how many doors you knock on? He goes, about 75 a day. I go, holy man. How many people come to the door? He goes, maybe 20. How many do you sell? 2 or 3.
That's good.
And he was like, so he got into that rhythm of doing stuff. But, you know, at some point he called me one day. He goes, hey, Dad, I'm in the middle of a webinar. What? He goes, can I talk to you for a second? I go, no, I'm in the middle of it. He goes, please. So I put everybody on pause. I go, what's up? Are you okay? He goes, not so good.
What happened?
I said, are you in your car? He goes, yeah. I go, what's going on? He goes, I can't go back in. They call in apartment buildings. He goes, I can't go back in that building. I go, okay. So you need a pep talk? He goes, yeah. I go, get out of your car. Nice. And he gets out of his car and say, I like myself. I like my, no, louder, come on. I like, come on, yeah. So I'm pumping him up for like, I go, you got 10, 15 seconds. I like myself. Now go back in the building and text me when you get a deal. So he hangs up. He hangs up. I'm sitting there doing the webinar 20 minutes later. Got one.
Nice.
20 minutes. No, 20 minutes. Got another one. Oh, it was his best day. Oh, best great. Day. But he's. But that's the point. Wow. The toughest sell of all
is
yourself.
That's interesting.
So I just have to get him to.
Yeah. Yeah. We all hold on to stuff too, right? Right. I know. Well, so you, I know, I don't know how many seminars you do a year, but I know it's a lot. I've been to a lot of them, as you know. Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting when you, like everyone in your seminars, at least most of people have some kind of business somewhere. And so I always find it interesting because you have everyone stand up and then you have everyone make calls and then you have them like do this like a sales funnel right there in the room.
Right there.
And can you talk about that? Because it's very interesting, by the way. Think about these people fly in from all over the world. Mm-hmm. They pay pretty big money and they already have successful businesses. They spend who knows how much to get wherever they're you know, get to wherever you're at. And then you just in a matter of like an hour, you know, 10x their sales. Like, how does that even work? I mean, seriously, it's actually pretty, I watched it. It's kind of mind blowing.
Well, nobody's really asked that question in public before, but I'm happy to answer it because I'd like to know.
I mean, because these are people that, I mean, in a lot of circles, people are like, that person, I really admire that person. They're great at, you know, they have big businesses or whatever. And then you take that person that's, you know, already on that pedestal somewhere, and they're already, you know, trying to learn more. And you just go, man, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, the way that happens is, first of all, one assumption. Most people don't give themselves as much credit as they should. I mean, most people are capable of way more than they give themselves credit for. That's number one. That's my assumption after dealing with thousands of people. Second thing is this, is I give them some training. We do some role plays. We do all that kind of stuff for about a day or so. You know, so they got some basic skills. I said, okay, so talk is cheap. Close the doors. Pull out your phone. You got 10 minutes. What? Yeah, 10 minutes. You get on the phone and you can sell your own product, sell whatever you want. You can sell a car, you sell a property, whatever you want to sell. But you got 10 minutes. You're in teams and we're going to see who sells the most, which team sells the most in the next 10 minutes. Go. Wow. And it's just like, and they're in this pressure cooker and everybody's yelling. And I said, when you get one, celebrate. So the first person, I'm always waiting for the first one. Got one like that. All of a sudden everybody's like, oh, right? And so what happens is we in Vietnam, we had, I don't know, 400 people in a room and we put them through that exercise. They did $9.7 million US.
In 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. I've seen you do stuff like this. It just blows my mind.
But it proves my theory is that most people don't way underestimate themselves. So there's some elements there. You know, you're in a closed environment. You're under pressure. There's a sense of urgency.
You have a team.
Yep. You're in a team. Your numbers are going to go up because then we take all their numbers and we put them up on the board so everybody's going to see your numbers. Okay, so all those elements are in there. And it's never failed.
Yeah.
I know. I tell you, I've seen it a number of times, and it just blows my mind because these are not like beginners. These are people that actually have businesses.
And what's interesting, there are some people that are beginners. And because of the energy, they step up.
Oh, okay.
They step up too.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty neat. Anyway, I've seen that a few times. So let's talk about your next book, your latest book, Summit Leadership. And as a lot of you guys know, this is Blair's book here. He's climbed Kilimanjaro 12 times. By the way, I'm doing it again.
Good.
Yeah. Awesome. With my two boys together.
Awesome. Awesome.
And it came from Kilimanjaro. And, you know, they're the one thing that I learned is there's a lot of lessons from Killy. My gosh. There's so many. Now, I'd love to know what's in the book, how you came about it, because now you've brought, well, you're doing seminars on the mountain. Yes. That's got to be mind-blowing.
Yeah, so what we did is we went there originally, my oldest son, Ben, and I, because we wanted to do some community service, do something good together, and we actually failed the first time. He got really, really sick after camp one. We had to turn back. I never thought we'd go back until 6 months later. Ben comes up to me, he goes, Dad, we got to go back. I go, back to Killy? He goes, yeah. I go, why? He goes, not a day I don't think about that mountain kicking my ass. He goes, I got to go back.
Good for him.
So it's like, okay, we're going. And so when we went up and we successfully summited it together, I watched our mutual friends, Kevin and Kristen, who own K2 Adventures,
yep,
who are our guides on the mountain. I watched how they masterfully took a group of people that had never climbed,
yep,
safely up and down. And just so you know, at Kilimanjaro, 40%, only 40% of the people that ever go there worldwide in a given year will ever summit.
Yeah.
And they summit over 95%.
Yeah. So, okay. So before we go further, I want people to soak that in. So the average for the world is 40%, because I knew this. K2 has figured out a way to have 95% of the people that they bring summit.
That's
a big difference.
That's a big difference.
Okay, so that's done through thought.
That's done, not by chance.
Correct. Like there's a system that they follow, just like in business. So, all right. So I don't want to interrupt anymore, but so let's keep going.
And that's the point. And so when we finally summited it, I had been keeping a logbook the whole time, all the way up the mountain. And I'm going, this is brilliant. I came up with like 25 different strategies, techniques, things that they did that anybody could use in their business that get us all up and down that mountain safely. And so on the way down, I said to Kevin, I go, do you mind if I bring some friends? I want to come back next year. I'm going to bring some of my entrepreneurial friends, some of my students to come back.
Thanks for the call, by the way. I'm just kidding.
It's
I went anyway.
You went anyway. So we go back, and after each camp, they set up a big dome tent. We get at the end of every day, we go in and debrief the day. What happened? What happened on the trail? How does this apply to your business? How does it apply to your life? How does it apply to your marriage, your relationships? Wow. All that stuff. And it becomes very, very intense. Lots of laughs, lots of tears. It's amazing. So we do that all the way up the mountain.
Each night?
Each night. We do that night. So it's a whole seminar on the mountain, and then we have our final debrief at the end. But one thing that I've learned, that the person that goes up that mountain is not the same person that comes down.
Yeah, well, that was the case without the seminar. I can only imagine what it's like with, right? Because one of the things I think a lot of times is you don't sit and really be thoughtful and think through what happened in one day.
That's right.
Right? I mean, even in every day.
Right.
Most people don't do that. Like, what were my wins today? Like, you journal a lot. I get texts from you all the time about being grateful and things like that. There's a lot of little things. So without giving away too much, what are some of the basic things people could do today that are listening that they could apply immediately that will change their trajectory?
Okay. Well, there's a couple basic ones. And one of the ones is the only way you can get up Killy is one step at a time.
Yeah.
That's the killer. I mean, if you look at the summit, it can be very intimidating.
Don't look at it.
Just don't look. So it's about one step, one breath, one step, one camp at a time. One of the things that Kevin, our guide, says, don't ever ask me what we're going to do tomorrow, the next day, or the next day. I don't want you to think about it. We keep your mind clear. Keep it focused on what's going on right there.
Yeah.
Second lesson. We've got porters, the people that carry our gear, 3-1. In other words, for every one of us climbing, there are three people carrying our stuff, making our meals, setting up tents, doing all that stuff. So it alleviates a huge burden.
Team.
Yeah. It's a team. It's a support team. So the people that you have on your teams are specifically doing this and not trying to do everything.
Right.
You know, of course, the biggest lesson of all you've heard before is never about the summit.
Yeah.
It's never about the summit, because the truth is, we get to the summit, it's a kind of anticlimactic. People go,
you're not there very long, maybe less than an hour.
Yeah, if that.
And you're exhausted.
Right. You go, let's just get down. You know, it's like, and people are a little bit depressed because all these months of training and all of that, the day by day and one step at a time, it's now over. And all of a sudden that hits you, and now you're on the way down and everybody is going to go home. So what I teach is that it's not about the summit. Dr. Fuller said this too. It's not about the goal. You set the goal, clear, get to the top of the mountain, clear, sales goal, whatever it is. But what you got to do is you got to take a look at the ripple effect of everything that's happening along the way, because that's where the good stuff is. That's
precession.
Precession.
Yeah.
Didn't use that name right now. But yeah, it's all about the precession. And those are some of the really big lessons. Some of the other stuff about always calibrating your team and stuff like that. But the thing about Killy is that the lessons come very quickly, and you got to do something about them right away, because you got to keep moving. You got to keep going.
Just now, like business or personal.
Well, see, the difference in business is you got more time. So you ruminate, you forget about it, you get distracted. So what I said, the mountain leadership is the same as business leadership, because the same lessons you have in business are the same lessons you face in those 7 days on the mountain, in my experience. But here, you're guided and you have to deal with it because the elements dictate it right now. You can't wait till 3 months from now.
I'll give you a great example. In 2015, when I went with Kyle, I got dysentery.
Remember that?
Oh.
Well, how miserable is that?
It was horrible. It was like on day five. And so I wasn't able to eat or drink any water because it would flow right through me. And when I mean flow, I mean immediate. And so it was horrible. And then when you get up into the colder weather, you're bundled up. You got 2-3 layers on. And so if something goes through you quickly, it's not easy. You know what I mean? So anyway, I'll never forget, though, I had a really high temperature. And I was in the middle of the night, and somebody in the tent next to me had pulmonary edema. They were getting pulled off the mountain. And we were at base camp. And I was in the tent with my son. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, my feet, I was really, really not good. And all I could think about, I swear, was when we go back to the United States and somebody says, oh, I was killing, Kyle's going to go, well, I made it, but my dad didn't. That's all I was thinking about. I'm like, that's not fucking happening. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, that's what drove me. Like, there's no way that I'm going to be sitting around, because I know I'm going to be sitting around a dinner table with all my knucklehead buddies, and they are going to be ruthless.
Oh, yeah.
You're sure, right? They're like, okay, you had a little stomach fever or, you know, whatever, stomach flu. I'm like, there's no way. So I barely made it, man. To your point, you got to kick it in. You got to, you know, there has to be something like that. I'm not going to not make it.
Right.
That has to happen. Somehow you have to dig deeper. And you don't know until you know, until you're there, right?
And you don't know where it's going to come from.
Right. And that's actually, the team around you is so helpful, right, at that point. And not just like from an empathetic standpoint. That's all a bunch of BS. This is like, you know, like, right? It can be. I shouldn't say it's completely BS. But it is interesting to me to watch, you know, because a lot of people do turn back, over half, right?
That's right. Over half, you know, and they're either not prepared, but to your point, the thing that about Killy, it's about grit, you know, and it's about finding that peace, because it, for most people, it's probably one of the hardest things they'll ever do. It's not dangerous, but it's one of the hardest things they'll ever do. And so the question is, do you have that in you to do it? To, like I said, my son, my 16-year-old son at the time, it was gnawing at him for 6 months that he couldn't make it, and he had to go back to prove it to himself.
Yep.
You know, and that's the value of Killy, because everything else, after you come off of Kilimanjaro, all the other problems that you had down below the cloud,
they're not even there.
Yeah, it's not a big, but when you get back, they're not such a big deal anymore.
Correct.
As you thought they were.
They're insignificant. Yeah, to your point, there's one other thing. I took both my sons when they were 17, as you know, and we summited on Father's Day both times, which was super cool. But afterwards, you know, head Mac, you say, okay, you know, what was your takeaway like from the entire experience? Because you're there not almost a month, maybe, right? 3 weeks?
12, 13 days, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we went on a safari.
Oh, yeah.
So, and he said, you know, it was funny. When I went to Africa, I was surprised at how poor everyone was. And, you know, which is really, really poor. I mean, they're selling like an orange or an apple or a banana or a coffin, as you know, because, you know, at Moshi, that, you know, they had all those coffins. And I said, what'd you learn? He said, well, it was surprising that how happy the people are and that they have really nothing. So there's no perspective for them. You know, like you come from the U.S. and you know, there's rich and poor, but when you're there, you don't see the rich, if there is even rich. And they're just happy. And I was like, what a great perspective for a young man at that age, after all of that, for him to see, to have that in his head. And it changed him.
Yeah.
When he came back to the U.S., it changed him.
Yeah, and that's priceless. I mean, you can talk to somebody about that, but until they experience it,
yeah,
it's now in his heart.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, and we're charitable as a family, but that, it just, now it's just a non-negotiable thing for him.
Right.
You know,
that's awesome.
which happened from his own perspective and not from the parents.
Right. That's the best.
I know. Best. So, and then we got a few more minutes here. I wanted to talk about, you're going to be at Limitless.
I am.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited for that in June. So, so you guys don't know, we got Limitless. It's going to be the 15th, 16th, 17th of June. And, Blair is going to be one of the speakers there. So we should have 2,000 people.
That's going to be awesome. Last year was amazing.
Yeah,
the quality of the speakers was literally mind blowing, and the audience. I mean, they were like the right people,
high energy.
Yeah, the right people for the right audience for the right speakers. It was electric.
Yeah, I really hope we can match that, because we sold out, as you know, last year, and this year we got Patrick Bet-David.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and of course Kyo, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, and a whole bunch of other really really good speakers. We're close on Chris Voss. We don't have that lined up yet, but I think we might be. So I'm excited you're going to talk. What do you think people need right now? You know, we're going through this kind of weird time. There's a lot of division. There's a lot of political BS. There's a lot of stuff going on with the financial system. You know, we get on a call every week with Robert, which will just, you know, blow your mind. You know, so there's all kinds of stuff, but I think it's a good call because it's real. It's really happening. There are people losing their jobs. There's people afraid to speak up. There's, you know, there's businesses that are turning. You know, we're starting to see profits down. We're starting to see inflation up. We're starting to see people going through some tough times. What do you think the right message is?
Well, I think the message is very similar to the message of when COVID shut us all down, in my experience. Because when COVID shut down, my business evaporated. I mean, can't travel, can't do anything, right? And so I had a choice. I had to go to what I got to do to bail out my company, to get money going. But I know that I had this group of several hundred trainers and student trainers basically around the world. What do I do? What do I do? And I had to make a decision. And I think it's the same decision today. Decision is, do I support my team or I support myself right now?
Nice.
You know, and I chose the team, and it was the best. I was the best business decision I've ever made in my life. I didn't even know what to do. I called them all together on a global call. We had several hundred people on the call. I had Robert as a speaker on the call, and I didn't even know what we were going to talk about. I said, how many people are shell-shocked right now? And if you could see them on Zoom, their eyes were glazed. Some people were dead tears in their eyes. They were terrorized.
Yeah. It was a rough time.
I put them into breakout rooms. I want you to talk about what you've learned over this last week. If anybody had a win, share it. I'm going, okay, so gonna wait here 5-6 minutes. What's gonna happen? They come back to the room, and it was like somebody wove a magic wand over all of them. They're smiling, they're energetic, they're excited. I go, and what I got is by just allowing people to come together, and to, there's safety in numbers. We always talk about, you said it too, you go up, Killy, it requires a team.
Yeah, it does.
All this stuff. And what I think COVID was trying to teach us is if we stick together and work as a team rather than as fractionated individuals, then that's going to take us through any crisis.
Right.
We'll make that, you know? But if everybody runs for cover and going to do their own thing and you're in, you're out. I mean, that's the seeds of destruction, in my experience.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think people are filled divided. And I think it's interesting because I don't think, you know, I want to pat ourselves on the back with Limitless last year and say, you know, well done and all that stuff. But I think a lot of it had to do with getting people together.
Yeah, it was.
And a community, and people were generally happy to see each other and happy to see, you know, people, you know, prospering. And I think you're right. I think the one thing, you know, that's the work from home, the culture, like people's cultures are falling right now. There's a lot of turnover and, you know, it's an interesting experiment that's going on right now because there's a connectivity that's missing in a lot of organizations, not all of them, that I think that, you know, people need right now. Would you agree?
I agree. And that's why Summit Leadership.
Yeah.
Because it requires leadership. This is not about, you know, just being good at what you do. This is about being able to lead a team, be able to lead a group of people, lead a movement. Like what you've done is over the last couple of years has been amazing with KenMcElroy.com and bring people together and get them in groups and provide them with education. These are the things that allow us to move ahead.
Yeah.
You know, education moves us ahead. Good education.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think that is the key. It's like it's team first. Mission first, team second, individual third.
Mission first, team second. Yeah, I know. I was funny. I was having a conversation today with one of my people, and I said, you know, so what do you think is going to move the needle? And it was all the basic stuff that you would hear. And I've said, that's management. I said, what's missing is leadership. How do you see something in somebody that they don't see and help them? That's leadership.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. And how do you get somebody to go from where they are to someplace that's unknown?
Correct.
You know, from the known to the unknown, because right, that barrier is fear.
Make the comfortable, you know,
right?
Go from comfortable to uncomfortable.
That's it.
Yeah, I know it. Cool, cool. And then let's talk about Rari Publishing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun, right?
Exciting.
So you guys don't know what that is. It's Real Advisors, Real Information. So we've got a whole book series of business owners and entrepreneurs trying to put together a whole series. Well, we already actually have most everybody.
Right.
It's going to be a series at RariPublishing.com. And, you know, it'll be the one-stop shop for people that are looking to grow their business, grow their sales, you know, help them legally. If you're looking for real estate, marketing, tax.
All of it.
Yeah.
And that's and the thing that's different about Rari is that these authors are people that are really doing it in the real world. Yeah. These are not professors. I mean, they might be professors, but they're all really working it right now in this environment. So it's real time and it's real.
Yeah.
Advisors with real information.
You know, that's why I love Robert, you know, Kiyosaki, because he's like, you know, who are your teachers?
Yeah.
You know, if they're actually not doing what they're saying or writing about, you know, then they're probably not the right teachers.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right. And you should be able to go to Rari each month and get free downloads, podcasts, hear from experts in the field, hear from some of the authors. It's just going to be a really powerful brand.
It's going to be phenomenal. I can't wait. Yeah, so we're rolling that out here this quarter. And then how do people get a hold of you, Blair? Because I know, you know, we have a pretty robust customer, and you know they're business owners, they're entrepreneurs, and some of them, you know, can use a lot of what you have. So what's the best way to reach you?
It's really simple. Just go to BlairSinger.com, and there's a ton of great information there. A lot of free information too about teams, about leadership, about sales, about little voice mastery, and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of options for people there. Videos, programs, online, offline programs, and now we've got trainers in countries all over the world that are teaching those programs.
Yeah,
thank goodness.
Yeah,
and so it's powerful. So if a person is lost, there's really no excuse for it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not an excuse. You can't blame it on school because you can't blame it on university because there is good information out there. And that's why we put RARI together. That's why I've been in this business. That's why you've been done so well in this business is because people want the truth.
Yes.
They don't want a narrative around it.
Correct.
They just tell me what I can do to better myself and my community and my business.
Okay. Well, there you go, guys. Blair, you're the best.
Thanks, you got, man. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Strategies Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and let us know what you thought of today's episode. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Any information or advice available on this podcast is intended for educational and general guidance only. Kem McElroy and KemMcElroy.com LLC shall not be liable for any direct, incidental, consequential, indirect, or punitive damages arising out of the access to or use of any of the content available on this podcast. Consult a financial advisor or other wealth management professional before you make an investment of any kind. Although Kem McElroy and his affiliates take all reasonable care to ensure the contents of this podcast are accurate and up to date, all information contained on it is provided as is. Kem McElroy makes no warranties or representations of any kind concerning the accuracy or suitability of the information contained on this podcast. Any links to other websites are provided only as a convenience, and KemMcElroy.com LLC encourages you to read the privacy statements of any third-party websites.